record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Butcher.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday. It is the last day of our broadcast week, and this would be the 15th of June. In the year 2005. I'm glad you're with us tonight, and I hope you had a lovely day, folks. I took a day off today, and it, not like I didn't do anything, but it was a nice day. Wet outside. Couldn't get out there to really do anything. Putzed around the house and got some stuff done in here. And that's kind of a day off in at this time of year. When the outdoors, there's so much to do out there. It's, I'm messing with my cassette deck right now. We're going to, last night, I was reading to you from the 16th chapter of the book Jewish Persecution, and that chapter in chapter 17, addressed the Freemasonry and the connection of Freemasonry to Judaism. But we want to remember that the Jews themselves, the elite, have said that there is no such religion as Judaism. It is Talmudism or Phariseeism, folks. In fact, Moses Mendelssohn said that Judaism is not a religion. It is a law religionized. And that's what we were, this chapter is addressing, is the connection. Let us first hear with our spiritual message. This again is from The Course in Miracles. These are cards that I pulled that were meaningful to me. And so I just saved them out to share with you. And this one is from the workbook. On page 372, the mind that serves the Holy Spirit is unlimited forever in all ways, beyond the laws of time and space, unbound by any preconceptions, and with strength and power to do whatever it is asked. The mind that serves the Holy Spirit is unlimited forever. In all ways, beyond the laws of time and space, unbound by any preconceptions, and with strength and power to do whatever it is asked. And all we have to do is ask and be a listening, and miracles do happen. And I don't mean ask for outcomes. For me, maybe just asking that we're listening, that we will be able to be aware of, consciously aware of that inner guidance that is always there. The Holy Spirit within us is always guiding, always directing. And if we're not listening and not hearing it, that's when we make our mistakes. And I know that from my own personal experience. I left my water out in the kitchen. That is very frustrating when I think I'm all set in here. So maybe I can make it until the half hour. When I'm reading like this, though, it's nice to be able to sip on a glass of water. I got a call from Eleanor last night, and she said that the broadcast was just on the edge of being overmodulated on the shortwave. I know that it was coming in perfectly clear on the internet. So once again, it would be because the engineers at WWCR are evidently not quite paying attention. And I remember the one night we went a whole half hour. People were calling in and saying, I cannot hear you. It's overmodulated. And I asked Nicholas to please call WWCR, and the engineer made one tiny little, just one tiny, evidently little turn of a knob, whatever, and there it was for the next half hour. As so many people said, it just came in clear as a bell. So I did ask Eleanor, and she listens constantly, and she's really been a wonderful help as far as alerting me to the reception, the shortwave reception. And I asked Eleanor in the future. She said you had to listen very closely to hear the broadcast last night because of it was right there on the edge of overmodulation. I don't want you to have to strain to hear this broadcast. You all are paying $240 per hour for shortwave alone to hear this broadcast, and you deserve to have the best that WWCR can offer. And the reason that we're charged so much on this particular frequency is because it's the best. This is, you know, what I'm told. So Eleanor said that in the future, if she notices that, she will call immediately. And we'll try to get it squared away, folks. Now, tell you where we left off. What we were doing last night is the author of the book I was reading. I was reading to you from the book Jewish Persecution that is online at sweetliberty.org. And in this particular chapter, I am quoting and transcribed from another book titled The Cause of World Unrest. And what the author was doing was taking us through some of the rituals that the different levels, degrees of Freemasonry goes through. And, maybe I should just repeat that one. In fact, the one of them, he says, in the ninth degree, I'm going to go back up here. In the ninth degree, the master of ceremony says, strike boldly at his head. Here is the assassin to those coming into the ninth degree. Here is the assassin. Strike boldly at his head and heart and revenge the death of the master.
Hello?
The candidate does so. Hello? I thought I heard somebody say hello to me on the telephone, on the headset. The candidate does so with his dagger, a voice exclaiming Nekum, N-E-K-U-M, which is a Hebrew word for revenge. Now, there's a lot of Christians who join the Freemasons believing that it's, at least in the beginning they believe it. If they get very far into it, I cannot believe that they can continue to delude themselves. It would have to be willful ignorance is what it would have to be. because this runs all the way through it. And now listen to this. In the ninth order also, the Venerable Master says, "My brethren, are you willing to take upon yourself the duties of governors of Israel and chiefs over the tribute with the resolution to discharge those duties faithfully and impartially?" And they all answer, "We do." And then in the next three orders, he says, are engaged in symbolic rituals dealing with the rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon. And in the concluding catechism of the 15th degree, listen to this. The question is asked, of what are the ruins of the walls of the city and the holy house an emblem? And they answer, of a country that has lost its liberties and an order ruined and proscribed. Question, to what do the 70 lights of the lodge allude? So evidently in the lodge itself there are 70 lights. And they say, they answer, to the 70 years of Hebrew captivity. Question, of what are the chains of the captives with their triangular links an emblem? And the answer is, of the three powers that have in all ages fettered the human intellect and chained the limbs of the people, the kings, priests, and nobles, of tyranny, superstition, and privilege. And isn't that, it's the pot calling the kettle black, folks. Tyranny, superstition, and privilege. And the question is, what art do you profess? They answer, Freemasonry. This is in the 15th degree. And what do you build? Temples and tabernacles. Where? And the answer is, in the souls of men and among the nations. Question, which way do you travel? And the answer, folks, from Babylon to Jerusalem. In other words, they're saying we're all Jews, yes? That's what it sounds like to me. And then, okay, I'm going to go, and now I'm going to come here where we let off last night. The Knights Templars, 27th degree, have again and again been accused of heretical practices, and it seems clear from the evidence that the charge of denying Christ and defiling the cross at their ceremony of initiation has been firmly established. They have to deny Jesus and defile the cross. Step by step are the initiates into the deeper secrets led to abandon belief not only in Christianity, but in all revealed religion, and by making them out and out materialists, the ground is prepared for the seeds of the Jacobinical code of revolution. And when at length the candidate, this is what I want you to listen to, when at length the candidate is admitted into the 30th degree, and after going through terrifying ordeals to test his obedience and secrecy, he becomes a Knight Kadosh, K-A-D-O-S-C-H. He learns that it is no longer Adoniram or Hiram whose death cries for vengeance. The grade of Kadosh commemorates, he is informed, the suppression of the Order of Templars by Pope Clement V. And Philippe le Bel, it probably is, together with the murder of the Grand Commander Jacques de Molay, who was burned alive by Philip's orders on March 11, 1314. Thus is the mask completely thrown aside, and the hidden designs of the Red Masonic Orders, Red, capital R, Red Masonic Orders are made clear. The objects to be pursued and annihilated are the two great institutions of the Christian world, represented by Clement V and Philip IV, the church and the state. Well, I wouldn't agree that those are the two great institutions, but that was a long time when this was written. The church and the state. Berul marks with true insight on page 325 of volume 2 that he said, quote, "The religion which is to be destroyed to recover the word or the true doctrine, the religion that is to be destroyed to recover the word is the religion of Christ, founded on revelation. This word in its full extent is liberty and equality. That is the word to be recovered, to be established by the total overthrow of the altar and the throne. The author says, we conclude with a few significant sentences taken from the Catechism of the Knights Kadash degree. That's the 30th degree, remember. We have been unable to obtain any authentic information, he says, on the ritual of the higher degrees. And this is what they are told in the 30th degree. My brother, you desire to unite yourself to an order which has labored in silence and secrecy for more than 500 years with a single end in view, and hitherto with only partial success. And that's end quoting that. And my comment here is that Masonry has been around for many more than 500 years, and perhaps there is truth in the telling that originally a secret society was instituted to preserve the truth held from the masses, truth held so closely by the priesthood and their man-made organized religions. In other words, the truth of the spiritual nature of mankind. Perhaps the secret societies became infiltrated, subverted, and branched off into many sects, S-E-C-T-S, resulting in its present form of Freemasonry for furthering the priestly plan for world dominion. That possibility entered my mind some time ago, the question not yet being an answer. Continuing with the Catechism of the Knights Kadash degree, listen to this. Listen closely. Any of you who are Freemasons out there, I don't care if you're only third degree. You've already heard what the protocols have said about it. All of the goyim who enter in are just there for show masonry. And they're being used as fools and tools. You are, if you are a Freemason. And then, of course, once you find this stuff out, if you don't get out, just remember, it is a choice you are making. And you can no longer plead ignorance, can you? You can no longer plead ignorance. Now listen to this. In the 30th degree, the Knights Kadash, it says, the Order of Knights Kadash has for its mission the avenging of a great crime. This is what the initiates into the 30th degree are told. Do you fully understand that this degree is not like much of so-called masonry? This degree is not a sham that means nothing and amounts to nothing. Do you fully understand that what you are now engaged in is real, will require the performance of duty, will exact sacrifice, will expose you to danger, and that this order means to deal with the affairs of nations and be once more a power in the world? And the author of The Cause of World Unrest says, we have been seen so far that, one, revolution is not a spontaneous combustion of the social order, but that, two, the match is lit by some secret agency or formidable sect. And three, that this agency conceals itself in the shadowy sanctuaries of certain forms of Freemasonry. And four, that these subversive forms of Freemasonry have a ritual of hatred for the cross and veneration for the temple, which suggests a Hebraic origin. But having got so far, we are faced by another question. If these secret societies instigate revolution, who or what instigates the secret society? And I ask, and if the Jews, hiding behind the mask of Freemasonry, have indeed instigated every revolution, we might reasonably ask, who instigated the American Revolution? And we will revisit this question later. And so, okay, here's what I'm going to do, folks. I'm going to stop reading here in 16 because it's a little bit, this is in-depth. It's very deep. And what I want... I'm going to skip over some of it. That's what I'm going to do. You can read it. You'll be able to read it on the website because I want to get on. There's a couple of places here I don't want to miss out on. Okay, now I'm going to read a question that the author is asking here. He says, is it possible, although here again anything in the nature of proof is wanting, that the Templars and the Jews made common cause? What is certain is that the Templars survived as a secret Masonic organization with a ritual inspired by hatred of and vengeance on church and state. Oh, I see what's happening. Okay. The execution of Jacques de Molay in the 14th century is one of those unhappy, far-off things for which no sane man would nourish an act of resentment, but revenge for the execution of Jacques de Molay turned into a ritual against church and king is another matter. The ritual was practiced on the eve of the French Revolution, when the head of Louis XVI fell into the sack. Not only was the death of Jacques de Molay revenged upon a descendant of Philippe le Bel, but a proscribed order and a proscribed race was revenged both and at once upon church and state. And then the elders of Zion in Protocol Number 3 boast, remember the French Revolution, to which it was we who gave the name of great. The secrets of its preparations are well known to us, for it was wholly the work of our hands. And recall the letter by Oscar Levy to Mr. George Pitt Rivers, author of The World Significance of the Russian Revolution. That was a 1920s book, and it's online at Sweet Liberty, by the way, sweetliberty.org. I transcribed that entire book. It's not a big one. And it's there in the section, How Wars Are Made Behind the Scenes. It was written 1920, folks. And this Oscar Levy, George Pitt Rivers was the author of The World Significance of the Russian Revolution, and he had sent a copy of the book to Oscar Levy to have him take a look at it. And Oscar Levy, in writing back, said, listen to this, to Mr. Pitt Rivers, he said, you rightly recognize that there is an ideology behind the Russian Revolution, and you clearly diagnose it as an ancient ideology. There is nothing new under the sun. It is even nothing new that this sun rises in the east. That is a Freemasonic code phrase, folks. He said, for Bolshevism is a religion and a faith. How could these half-converted believers ever dream to vanquish the, quote, truthful and the faithful of their own creed, these holy crusaders who had gathered round the red standard of the prophet Karl Marx and who fought under the daring guidance of experienced officers of all latter-day revolutions. Dash the Jews, he said. All latter-day revolutions. And then I return back to the world of the cause of world unrest, and I am going to leave off there. And what I'm going to do now is we're going to jump over to chapter 17, and I have to get this in order because I wanted to bring some of this up to you. I'm not going to pick this up on Monday, so I wanted to get through as much of it as possible. I will be getting, unless unforeseen events. Chapter 16 is finished. Chapter 17 is an nth away from being finished. And so I should have it over to Darren, and I know Darren will get it up as soon as possible. Let me go back here. I'm going to read again here from The Cause of World Unrest. This is from Chapter 14. He said, "It is now forgotten, and yet it contains a good deal that can be verified from other sources, and some things also which seem to be verified by recent events. In particular, there is a letter, or an alleged letter, said to have been written by Albert Pike, the, quote, sovereign pontiff of Universal Freemasonry, assisted by the 10 Ancients of the Grand Lodge of the Supreme Orient at Charleston, to the very illustrious brother Giuseppe Mazzini." By Albert Pike to Giuseppe Mazzini. And this letter is dated in Masonic style, August 15, 1871, and sets forth an anti-clerical policy which Mazzini is to follow in Italy. The measures proposed include, including secular education, the expulsion of the religious orders, and so forth, need not detain us. What is to our purpose occurs towards the end of the letter on page 605, volume 2. The writer explains that owing to the working out of this policy, the Pope may be driven at some future time out of Italy, and that established religion will then find its last refuge in Russia. The letter proceeds. This is a letter from Albert Pike to Mazzini. He says, "That is why when the autocratic empire of Russia will have become," now this was 1871, folks, "that is why when the autocratic empire of Russia will have become the citadel of papal Christianity, we shall unchain the revolutionary nihilists and atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm which will demonstrate clearly to the nations in all its horror the effect of absolute unbelief, mother of savagery and of the most bloody disorder." What's happening in the world today? What happened in over in Russia? "Unchain the revolutionary nihilists and atheists, provoke a formidable social cataclysm which will demonstrate clearly to the nations in all its horror the effect of absolute unbelief, mother of savagery and of the most bloody disorder." And then as he goes on, "and then everywhere the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the mad minority of revolutionaries will exterminate these destroyers of civilization, and the multitude disillusioned of Christianity, whose deist soul will up to that moment be without compass, thirsting for an ideal but not knowing where to bestow their worship, will receive the true light by the universal manifestation of the pure Luciferian doctrine, at last made public, a manifestation which will arise from the general movement of reaction following the destruction of atheism and Christianity, both at the same time vanquished and exterminated." Do you remember in the protocols I've read to you where they talk about their king, a despot of the blood of Zion, that will rule there in Jerusalem? They call him the Pope of the world, folks. And the author of The Cause of World Unrest says, "And now this letter is at least as old as 1896, if it is forgery. If it is genuine, it is as old as 1871. It must therefore be considered remarkable, whether as a forgery or as a genuine document, for it predicts what has happened in Russia, and it claims for its authors that they were preparing to bring about what has happened. We're going to be right back. This broadcast is brought to you by you, ladies and gentlemen. And if you'd like to see it stay on the air, it is up to you, totally up to you, whether that happens or not. If you're not part of it, and you're listening, and you appreciate it, you might like to get involved. I'll be right back.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Roll away the dark.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, and let me thank you, each and every one of you who are supporting this broadcast. As you know, you hear from me very, very seldom, if ever. Some of you have never had communication from me. And that is my one great deep regret. And I will tell you that I just balance, juggle, I guess you might say. There is no balance. just juggle. So many things here. And it's something that you must know. I want you to know this. Without hearing it from me personally, from a letter, that each and every one of you, when you send your sponsorship donations, I say a thank you to you. And there is not one of you that I take for granted, not one of you. And so please know that. Know that you have my thank you, and you have my admiration, besides my appreciation, because you are the ones that are paying for and supporting this broadcast for all of those who listen and aren't taking part in it. And I don't know about those people who listen and don't take part, because it's almost beyond belief that somebody can't afford $2 or $3 a month. And I believe that if every single one of you listening sent $5 a month, we wouldn't be so far deeply behind in our airtime bill. So many of you are paying for those who listen. They're takers, not givers, maybe. That's what it is. But it's up to you. Let me get back with this. The author, after this that we just read from his letter, Albert Pike's letter about the horror, absolute unbelief, mother of savagery and of the most bloody disorder. He says, if we compare more closely the words of the Masonic letter with what has actually happened in Russia, we cannot but see how close is the correspondence between the threats and the reality. the Masonic letter. Well, I've already repeated it about five times. We'll do it again. We shall unchain the revolutionary nihilists and atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, horror, savagery, the most bloody disorder. And he says, compare this with Mr. Churchill's description. This is Winston Churchill, quote, describing that revolution, in the same way that you might send a file to tear to pieces every institution. Long internal terrors menaced by famine, sufferings more fearful than modern records hold. The author says, whatever explanation that we may incline to give, we must at least allow that it is a document which is very difficult to explain, and there is this much to be said in support of it, that Mazzini certainly was connected, as we shall see, with the birth of that movement of revolutionary nihilism called the Internationale. One thing is certain, the motive suggested by Albert Pike for the destruction of Russia is not adequate. The cult of Adonism, whatever that may be, and the hypotheses that the Pope might take refuge in Russia would never have driven a body of conspirators to plot the destruction of Russia. But if the Charleston Lodge was, as it is generally supposed to be, very largely Jewish in origin and control, the motive becomes intelligible. It would lie in the hatred of the political Jew, both for Russia and for Christianity. And I end quoting the cause of world unrest there. I said, it appears that the definition of a Freemason, being a Noahide, refers to the non-Jew Freemasons who embrace the Old Testament God, Jehovah, along with the Talmudic Kabbalistic precepts, building temples and tabernacles in the souls of men and nations, taking upon themselves the duties of governors of Israel, traveling from Babylon to Jerusalem, having as its goal to rebuild the temple, etc. Is it any wonder that the ever-loving love for Israel is so blatantly apparent amongst high-placed elected officials and judges, most of them also being high-degree Freemasons? They might, in fact, be considered the front line of the new species made in hell, Hasidic Gentiles. After finishing chapter 12, which you might want to revisit, a question arose. Since the elders of Zion claim responsibility for all revolutions, why would we believe that the American Revolution was not of their hands? The answer is found in various sources, beginning with Jerry Klinger's How the Jews Saved the American Revolution. This comes from the Jewish Magazine Online, and I've got the website here. His article begins with a quote. The Jews of St. Eustatius, Caribbean Antilles, cannot too soon be taken care of. They are notorious in the cause of America and France. That was allegedly a quote by Admiral Sir George Rodney, commander of the British fleet. Listen to this. He says, the colonial American Jewish experience, 1654 to 1770, was characterized by sharp departures from historic European anti-Semitic patterns of isolation, social, economic, physical, legislative, and religious discrimination. Talking about the Jews in early America here, folks. And that's what we addressed in Chapter 12 also, and their hand in the Constitution. The American colonial world was growing, changing, and evolving so rapidly it did not have time to focus on historical Jewish scapegoatism. The demands of the frontier and the expanding new American economic power demanded the best of all its people. Jews in colonial America struggled and won rights that were inconceivable and non-existent in Europe. Jews struggled for and won the rights to equal economic opportunity, to own land, to go to higher secular education, to serve in the armed militias, to vote, and in some colonies, to become members of the legislative bodies. In some colonies, the struggle was easy, and others, it was very hard. The American experience was not an automatic entitlement to toleration and sufferance. Rather, the, listen to this, free revolutionary experience was one that permitted the old discriminations to be challenged and eventually to be put aside. Hatred of the Jew and imported anti-Semitism did exist, but it could not flourish in the melting pot of common need and survival. That's why the U.S. of A. was made to become the melting pot, folks, a place for them to hide amongst all of the, quote, multiculturalism here. And then he said, listen to this, Jews traced their earliest participation in Virginia's life from the 16th century with Sir Walter Raleigh through Jamestown in the Revolution. The first permanent synagogue community, Kahila HaKadosh, Beth Shalom, was founded in 1789 in Richmond, Virginia. Kadosh, the 30th degree of Freemasonry? The first permanent synagogue community, as in Knights Kadosh degree of Freemasonry. Let's review the initiation ceremony into that degree from the last chapter. According to the Master of Ceremonies, the Order of Knights Kadosh has for its mission the avenging of a great crime. Do you fully understand? This degree is not, like much of so-called masonry, a sham that means nothing and amounts to nothing, that what you are now engaged in is real, will require the performance of duty, will exact sacrifice, will expose you to danger, and that this order means to deal with the affairs of nations and be once more a power in the world. And what does it look like the U.S. of A. is doing today? The new United Nations. And this Jerry Klinger continues, the Jews tended to settle wherever doors were open, most frequently in the urban environments, but also in rural and frontier areas. Jews did not come seeking freedom of religion as much as freedom of opportunity. Traditional Judaism weakened in the face of American freedom of choice, only to be reborn later with an American voice. Traditional Judaism weakened in the face of American freedom of choice, only to be reborn later with an American voice. Traditional Judaism now has an American voice. The American Revolution did not start out intentionally as a revolution. The colonial American world was an evolving, growing English world that demanded fair representation from the British Parliament. The British government saw the Americas as a source of money, power, and natural resources. The British government failed to realize the colonial saw themselves as British Americans with the right to a voice. I'm going to skip down here. The Revolutionary War was to be the longest war in American history prior to Vietnam. It was fought over a 1,500-mile front on the developed farmlands of 13 colonies, on the sea and on the frontier. October 25th, 1765, listen to this closely, a group of Philadelphia merchants gathered in the State House to sign the non-importation agreement to fight the hated stamp tax of the British government. The first man to step forward to sign his name was the president of Mikveh Israel Congregation, Philadelphia's only synagogue. That first man's name was Matthias Bush. So they began the tensions. These merchants, they were Jews, folks, probably most of them. I'm not saying all of them were, but it's already a known fact that while the European white settlers were being putting forth all of the energy into settling and clearing and farming and etc. The Jews set up their businesses. They were the merchants. They were the ship builders and the masters of money. As the tensions between Britain and the American colonies increased and finally erupted into war, the American colonial population was split almost in two-thirds. One-third supported the war, one-third was neutral, and one-third was pro-British. The small Jewish population of America was also divided. The choice, though, was very heavily and disproportionately in favor and support of the American Revolution. Not only did the Jews pledge their fortunes and sacred honor for America, but their lives. In Philadelphia, July 4, 1776, listen to this. The Declaration of Independence was written. A copy was sent to Amsterdam via the small Dutch Caribbean island of St. Eustatius. That's where the Jews were. The declaration was intercepted by the British at sea. An accompanying letter with the Declaration of Independence was also intercepted and sent to London as being a secret code about the document that needed to be deciphered. The letter was written in Yiddish. Can you look behind the scenes and see how they were back there manipulating and pushing and urging? The Declaration of Independence being sent to Amsterdam was intercepted by Britain, and it was being sent to Amsterdam via the island of St. Eustatius, and here was the letter. And we might ask here why a copy of the Declaration of Independence was being sent to the Jews at St. Eustatius. It is likely that the plans for the American Revolution were worked out from that quarter. We're not privy to the content of the letter that accompanied the document, just the fact that it was written in Yiddish. Maybe it said something like, "We now have an entire nation of sacrificial lambs for Jehovah, Jove, our Lord." This next recalls Reuben Fink's assertion that some of the Jewish traders of Newport and Philadelphia were among the largest ship owners in America. Okay, I'm not going to do that. We've already done it. And then this Klinger asks, how did the Jews save the American Revolution? As late as 1781, the war had not been won by the Americans, nor was it lost by the British. Arms were being funneled into the colonies by arms merchants running the British blockade, primarily from the free trading island of Dutch St. Eustatius. Jewish merchants and armed traders, traders, were a major presence on the island. And then he goes on to say that the reason the Jews, how they helped to save the revolution, was that they were paying so much attention to St. Eustatius that it slowed them down here in America. If the Jews, it says, had not helped turn St. Eustatius into a major arms center for the revolution, and if Admiral Rodney had not spent so much time destroying St. Eustatius, and particularly the Jews, the war might have ended differently. There is little doubt that Admiral Rodney's anti-Semitism helped to squander his time and played a role in delaying and weakening the British fleet. Ironically, it was the Jews of St. Eustatius who helped win the American Revolution. And now, he mentions Haim Salomon in here. He says, in the area of finance, the young American government might have foundered too, except for the financial genius and personal financial risk and support taken by Haim Salomon. Salomon allegedly died bankrupted by his total support of the American cause. There's other stories about that too, folks. Though small in numbers, he says, the Jews chose to cast their fate with America. No, they didn't. It was the revolution that they cast their fate with. And now, here's more about Chaim Salomon, his partnership with Jew William Morris, the creation of the First Bank of America, and the loans made to the New World via Salomon's association with the Rothschilds of England. We'll see once again that they foment revolution. They fund both sides and become immensely more wealthy in the process. This first is from the Jewish World Review. It's about Chaim Salomon. I'm running out of my hour here. William Morris is mentioned in here. I'll just do it. I'll see how far I can get. In the pantheon of American Jewish heroes, Chaim Salomon has attained legendary status. His life was brief and tumultuous, but his impact on the American imagination great. The U.S. Postal Service issued a stamp hailing Salomon as a financial hero of the American Revolution. A monument to Salomon, Washington, George Washington, and Robert Morse, M-O-R-R-I-S, graces East Wacker Drive in Chicago and Beverly Hills, California. Is home to an organization called the American Jewish Patriots and Friends of Chaim Salomon. So there we've got George Washington, Robert Morse, and Chaim Salomon. Born in Lissa, Poland, Salomon spent several years moving around Western Europe and England, developing fluency in several languages that served him for the remainder of his life. Reaching New York City in 72, he swiftly established himself as a successful merchant and dealer in foreign securities, striking up an acquaintance with Alexander McDougal, leader of the New York Sons of Liberty. Salomon became active in the Patriot cause. When war broke out in 1776, Salomon got a contract to supply American troops in central New York. In 1777, he married Rachel Franks, whose brother Isaac was the lieutenant colonel on George Washington's staff. Their ketubah, I guess, resides at the American Jewish Historical Society. In the wake of a fire that destroyed much of New York City, British occupation forces arrested and imprisoned Salomon. I'm going to go beyond that. He escaped. He went to Philadelphia. He resumed his brokerage business. The French minister appointed Salomon paymaster general of the French forces fighting for the American cause. The Dutch and Spanish governments also engaged him to sell the securities that supported their loans to the Continental Congress. Now listen to this. In 1781, Congress established the Office of Finance to save the U.S. from fiscal ruin. Salomon allied himself with Superintendent of Finance William Morris and became one of the most effective brokers of bills of exchange to meet federal government expenses. Salomon also personally advanced funds to members of the Continental Congress. While supporting the national cause, he played a prominent role in the Philadelphia and National Jewish Community affairs. He served as a member of the Governing Council of Philadelphia's congregation, Mikveh Israel, was treasurer of Philadelphia's Society for Indigent Travelers, and participated in the nation's first known rabbinic court of arbitration. He helped lead, listen to this, the successful fight to repeal the test oath which barred Jews and other non-Christians from holding public office. I said it's interesting to note, no matter where the Jews live, no matter what the laws of the particular nation are, they're allowed to have their own courts. When they were allegedly captives in Babylon, they were allowed to live apart in their own section under their own laws. It makes one wonder who controlled the king of Babylon at the time. My guess would be the priesthood, as it appears to be the controlling hand behind Pharaoh's kings and today's prime ministers and presidents. And then here's more on Solomon. He operated within the context of a society and an age that considered all Jews as Shylocks and money grubbers. Nope, I'm skipping past that. There's more here. Brilliant financier. Listen to this. He was a brilliant... This is Explore Biography. This is a business section. Business figures in history. He was paymaster... Okay. He was a brilliant financier and one of George Washington's personal friends. At one point, he was... Okay, just a minute. During the American Revolution, Solomon went to France and raised an additional 3.5 million pounds from the Sassoon and Rothschild banking houses and families. He spoke 8 languages. When he was in France, he passed himself off as a French diplomat. Historical legends about him. He supposedly wrote the first draft of the U.S. Constitution, according to some historians. Some claim that he designed the Great Seal of the United States, which is why it has what some believe resembles a Jewish star above the eagle's head design, and it is also on the back of every American $1 bill. He believed the U.S. would become a world power. At war's end, many in the Continental Congress were desperately poor, and ironically, Solomon II died completely bankrupt. Just a minute. Well, here's another one, and this kind of is a repeat. Financial hero, businessman, and broker was responsible for raising most of the money needed to finance the American Revolution and later to save the new nation from collapse. There's Morris. There's some, maybe this is not, maybe I don't have this yet. Morris was started the first bank of North America. And you know, George Washington signed that. Okay, there were several other Jews who held the title of Deputy Inspector General of Masonry in the late 1700s. Nope, that's not the right one. Folks, I'm sorry. I'm rushing. I'm out of time. I think you've heard enough. Now, do you at least have an inkling that we've been taken to the cleaners royally, beginning way back at the beginning of the founding of this nation, and that our framers of the Constitution, the framers of the Constitution, framed we the people? I'm going to see you Monday, barring any unforeseen events. I hope you have a lovely 4 days, and I will hope to do the same. Thank you for being here, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless you, and good night.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program.